Don't fight a feeling. Excited to be here with you all this afternoon on WOLB 1010 AM. I'm honored to be your stand-in host, pinch hitting this afternoon. My name is Arnold Jolivet II, and I am here with Sister Jahari and the good Reverend Dobson. I'm here in the studio with them. Absolutely honored to be joining them this afternoon, coming across the airwaves. So we just say greetings. We say hello to everyone on this bright, beautiful, sunny day in the Baltimore metropolitan area. So,
greetings.
Sister Jahari, how are you today?
I am fabulous. Thank you, Brother Arnold, and thank you for correcting me on your name.
That's all right. That's all right. I just say don't call me late for dinner. I don't care what you call me, but don't call me late for dinner.
No, that's right. Yes. And we have the Honorable Reverend.
The good doctor.
Okay. Yes.
Everybody's looking at me.
Harold
all right,
Dobson.
So now.
He got his coffee, so he's fired up.
Yes.
I'm good to go at this point. And I just want to, Brother Daki Napata, who is here in spirit.
Yes, Reverend Daki Napata.
He probably will be calling in at some point. And so we want to raise him up, too. And he has, he likes to butcher my name with Junior, but as my mother pointed out, Junior was too country for any boys that she had. So I, like Brother Jolivet, am a second.
Well. So. But not number two.
Well,
you're number one.
number two.
That's called second.
It's all numbers.
Yes, yes.
So this afternoon, we'd like to invite you to give us a call. The number is 410-481-1010.
Yes.
And we've got an open show.
We were talking about, we're raising up and honoring Dr. Maya Angelou.
And that's important for us to, you know, we have to understand that we have been blessed as a generation to have been under her tutelage.
Yes.
Under her mamahood, under her nanahood. Healer, poet.
Educator.
Educator, teacher, walker, talker.
Yeah.
And all of the above and things that we can't even recall at this point. It's important. I mean, folk will, you know, kind of pull out various of her poetry and words and what have you, but one of the ones that I think highlights her life is Still I Rise.
And Still I Rise. Yes.
Which is, anybody who knows the story of Sister Angelou, her being raped and molested or molested at a young age and translating the conviction of the perpetrator and his subsequent death as a sign that she had killed him, and losing her voice to everybody except her brothers.
Yes.
For a number of years, is a testimony that is particularly poignant for our sisters, because we know that one of the great tragedies of our existence is the family secrets that oftentimes hides that kind of abuse, the kind of sexual abuse that young women suffer in families at the hands of males and boyfriends and folk who have lost their way.
Thank you for
that. But she raises that up and shows you that that's not a barrier to the achievement of things that
yet to come.
You can hardly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she went on to, in that time that she was silent, she was listening And she went on to learn six languages, and she went on to speak at presidential inaugurations. And
don't forget the point talk about when she broke her neck.
Go ahead. You talk about
it. Well, I've read the book so many decades ago, but I do know that she did break her neck, and that she had the faith that she would heal, and she did heal. And she went on to, I don't remember the part, but she did have a son, and she took her son to Ghana. She repatriated to Ghana at one point. And it's kind of foggy to me, so I'll let you continue with that. But I did want to bring that up because there are so many challenges that Sister Angelou, Dr. Angelou, came across, but she decided to have the faith and to overcome each misery, each obstacle. And she did overcome, and she became quite a bright light in our lives internationally. We have all looked up to her and to her words, her wisdom for decades. And we give praise for the gift of her and the gifts that she presented to us humans.
Wow, that's so powerful. And Maya Angelou actually helped to create not only her world, but the world of so many of us through her words. And, you know, it's amazing how powerful, we talked about this earlier, how powerful words are. You can literally create or destroy your life with words.
Yes.
The power, life and death is in the power of the tongue. And it's so amazing how this awesome woman was able to touch so many people with the words that she created. Some of the memorable quotes that she talked about and so many things that she said have just, the words will continue to live on. We're sitting here now after her passing, and we're talking about the impact that she had on so many people because of the great words that she allowed to come out of her spirit. You know, it's so amazing what took place when I looked at one of her quotes. It says, "One isn't necessarily born with courage, but one is born with potential. Without courage, we cannot practice any other virtue with consistency. We can't be kind, true, merciful, generous, or honest." That's one of her quotes from one of her writings. And
powerful,
it's just so amazing what she's has been able to do. So what I'm going to do right now, I'm actually going to bring on Reverend Daki Napata so he can engage in this conversation. So excited to have him on the line as well. Reverend Napata, you on the line.
Thank you so much, Brother Arnold, Reverend Arnold. Man, y'all did a magnificent job on Radio 1 on 1400 AM. And folks have been just blowing my phone up, talking about an awesome job you've done. And so I've encouraged them to what? If you believe that our job was awesome, then contribute to the show so that we can stay on the air. And if you have your businesses, you want us to advertise those businesses, we'll be more than glad to, men, women, or youngsters or whatever, you know, because we want to empower people as your father has done so well.
And, Daki, please tell everyone how they can contribute. Give us the practical means.
Okay. And Jerry, thank you so much with your organizing mind. One of the things we want to do is we want to be able to not only reach out to you like this, but you will see us in the marketplace. We will have flyers. We have a website. We have all kinds of technical links.
And the website is?
Yeah, can you pause 1 second, please? Thank you, Jerry, and thank you for reminding me. And one of the things we will be doing is in gathering. The Minority Contractors are always doing a whole range of workshops. They just did something not too long ago, a couple of days ago, at the Village of Cross Keys, where they bring men and women that are not only contractors, but the suppliers to hotels. You name the business, men and women, small and large.
Okay, I think we lost Reverend Napata, but as he was saying, it's all about networking. You network to increase your net worth. You become like those that you associate with. So it's all about using the power and leverage of numbers. If you have a business, regardless of what kind of business you may have a landscaping business. You may be a poet. You may be an author. It's so important to be able to step out into the marketplace to advertise. I learned a long time ago that a business with no sign is is a sign of no business. So you have to be, and right now you might not have the resources to have a website. You might not have the resource to have flyers, business cards, but your face, your voice is the best advertisement that you could possibly have. So each and every time that you step foot out that door, you are representing yourself. You're representing, more importantly, your God, but you're representing your business. So people are going to look. First impressions are lasting impressions. So if you have a business, you have to be able to portray that you are, you might not be where you want to be yet, but you have to absolutely walk in success and visualize yourself already being where you want to be as far as your business is concerned. So if you have a business, you can feel free to definitely get in contact with us here at the show so we can talk about and network you with other individuals of like minds, because eagles only fly with eagles. Reverend Dobson, you will never see an eagle relaxing on a perch with a pigeon. It's just not going to happen. And you will never see an eagle at Thanksgiving dinner on a plate. So we're excited about having eagles, not only in the studio, but listening as well. So that's where we are with that.
There's a tale that Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah tells about a eagle that was raised as a chicken. Mm. And he had the misfortune of having being orphaned at a young age, and he was raised among chickens, so he was walking around pecking on the ground doing like chickens do.
Right.
And someone came along and said, you know, that's an eagle amongst them chickens. And they said, no, it's a chicken.
Right.
And he said, well, let me see. And so they went and grabbed the eagle and whispered in the eagle's ear about the greatness of eagles and how they are meant not to go around getting their food from pecking it off the ground, but how they fly in the air and survey the whole situation. And because the eagle had been raised as a chicken, mm-hmm. He did not understand
his power
that he could fly and how high he could fly and how much he could soar. But due to gentle coaxing of the person who had seen him and explaining to him.
Another eagle, yeah.
Yeah, and actually.
You're not a chicken? Come on.
Came along and showed them where some eagles were flying and said, you know, that's where you belong. And he threw him up. And
it, come fly it, with me.
And before he knew it, the eagle was attaining his rightful position.
Mm-hmm.
So,
good one. Thank you.
These powerful
tales that we use in order to illustrate how folk who have been crippled in one way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we have to understand that the eagle. I mean, there was a point at which the chicken part of his existence was necessary, but he was ultimately designed to be
transformed. Yes.
Wow. How many of us are eagles, but we live the life of a chicken?
Mm.
You know, they say that most people are dead at 25, but buried at 65 or 75.
Ooh.
So there's more potential. There are more business ideas. There's more great inventions that are in the graveyard than we'll ever have here in the land of the living. So we encourage you to just reach forth. And when you, one thing about that story, and I've heard that story before, is when that eagle that was pecking around with the chickens, when it would see the other eagles flying above, it was something that was beating or pulsating within its heart, within its spirit. It couldn't recognize it, but it knew it was something about those eagles that it just didn't, that felt like it belonged. So how many of us see someone who is on television, or we see someone as having a certain level of success or breakthrough, and we start to feel something like, if it can happen for them, why can't it happen for me?
That's right.
You know, if God is no respecter of persons, if he could bless Sister Jahari with the gifts and talents that she has, why can I not have that same success? If he can give a Reverend Dobson the insight and wisdom that he has, why can I also not have that? So I'm excited about that story that you had, and it just is, it really resonates so strongly that I know there's some people that may be even listening now that have an idea, have a vision. You know, it's different between sight and vision. You know, sight is what I can only see, Sister Jahari and Reverend Dobson and the people here in the studio. I can see them with my eye, but my vision allows me to see something that might not even have come to fruition yet. Yes. That people are telling me that, oh, you'll never do it, you'll never make it. Mm. But it's your vision that will take
belief
you.
Belief and faith.
Belief and vision. All things are possible to them that believe. So yes. I guarantee you, if you listen to every person who has quote unquote had a level of success in any area, they will tell you that they had to visualize themselves being there first before they actually got there.
And step out of the box. To look beyond that box. There was a quote of Dr. Angelou that you gave Brother Arnold earlier, and it was about, you know, why try to be normal? Mm-hmm. What was that quote? It's you know, if you're stuck on being normal, then how can you do great things?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, so one thing that I know that I did, I come from a family of physicians, of people, nurses and people that are in the allopathic way of life. And at an early point, I saw that it wasn't working for me. So I started seeking outside. I did my own seeking. And I have built upon that over the years, over the decades. And I started out here in Baltimore on WEAA and Health Talk, and which I'm getting ready to do in a few minutes, as a matter of fact, 10 till. But one of the things that I would like to mention that Dr. John Chazelle, I brought him on as my co-host, and Dr. Chazelle taught me a paradigm of optimal health. And there are five levels of optimal health. There's physical health, emotional health, mental health, spiritual health. We can't forget that one. But there's one that a lot of people forget, and that's economic health, socioeconomic health. And so, you know, when we don't have money, when we don't have a way to generate money that is necessary to function in this day and age, then everything else can crumble.
Right.
And so it's very important to build our skills, and nothing is lost. Some people say that they've lost time when they go through relationships, when they go through various jobs or whatever. You never lose time because we're always learning. But one thing I would like to offer is, before we go to the phones again, is I would like to tell you about an opportunity, a business opportunity, if you'd like to build a business that will help other people with their health. There is going to be a meeting, an event, Thursday, June the 12th at 6:30 p.m. at the Radisson Hotel in Cross Keys. And so for further information, you may call 410-908-0786. That's 410-908-0786. And if you would like to call and join our conversation today, the number here is 410-481-1010. And so it might be Reverend Daki Napata that's on the line. We'd like to bring up the phone.
Okay, absolutely. Actually, we have, we talk about business. We have a gentleman who's absolutely a legend in the business community here in the civil rights community in the Baltimore metropolitan area, actually nationwide. I actually know this gentleman very well because he happens to be my father.
Oh.
So I'm excited to have him on the line. So let me see if we can grab him real quick. And are you on the line,
welcome,
sir?
Welcome.
It
It is I. I'm here, and I'm ready to serve.
All right. Well,
and his name, please.
His name is Arnold Jolivet, and we talked about using junior and second. Reverend Dobbs, he actually just goes by Arnold Jolivet, not senior. He doesn't want to have anything to do with senior, but he actually is, just to give a little background, is the head of the Minority Contract Association here, and initially helped to start that association in the 70s with Doug Sands and Robert Clay and gentlemen who've actually paved the way for anyone, even if you may not know these individuals. They've absolutely paved the way, and a lot of the freedom, a lot of the ability that we have as minorities to do business, to operate in the marketplace, has been paved by gentlemen such as my father. So I'm grateful for him, grateful for the example that he has set for me growing up. He's actually the person who's inspired me to be an entrepreneur, because I never actually remember my father working for anybody. I always remember him having his own business, being able to set his own hours, control his own time. And it's great when you can do that and yes. And just be that example. But the way he serves other people is absolutely amazing. So I'm going to turn over the platform and let you say a few words there.
Well, you know, you have said it so well. You actually said it far better and more provocative and more profoundly than I could ever say it. So I'm going to suggest, even though I'm paying the bill, that you guys all over the world simply say the benediction and let us go home.
All right. Well, we will definitely do that. And again, we appreciate you calling in. It's so important.
Wait, Doc.
I'm not going to cut him off. I'm going to let him say his way. He's being humble. He never met a mic he didn't like, Reverend Dawson. So he's being very humble right now. And,
we want to hear more.
Can you just brief? I'm going to ask you to just talk a little bit about, because there are people who are listening right now who want to start a business. There are people right now that have dreams. They're working for a company right now, but they see where there's a niche or there's an area where they can do business
or a
glass ceiling. What can you say to those either business owners who are frustrated or those people who want to start their business? What can you say to them, or what would you say to them, to someone who has the talent and abilities that they want to put to use to start their own business? What would you say to those folks?
Here's what I would say, but in addressing to the court, a lawyer would simply say, "Your Honor, may I give you my opening statement?" And the opening statement that I would give to our black and our other listeners today would be simply, yes, it is certainly desirable for all of us to be entrepreneurs. That is one of the most wonderful things that could ever happen. It has actually made me a millionaire more than five times. However, I have great concerns as to whether Baltimore City, even though it is essentially an African-American town, I have great, profound concerns and even doubts that is what's happening to Baltimore City, in Baltimore City, with our black leaders, our mayor, our president of the city council, our city solicitor. And here's what I'm saying. These leaders, even though we've elected them to be our leaders and to give opportunities to the black community, these leaders are not creating opportunities for our black population. And I worry that you're talking about all of the great opportunities that are for African-American entrepreneurs, but listen to me. You cannot create businesses where there are no jobs. I do not recommend nor advocate that we create or start new businesses when the businesses that we already have are not getting any contracts from the city. In my opinion, yes, it's laudable, it's desirable that we create additional business. And I would like to see every young person, every old person, every person per se create their own business. But what I would simply say to you, what I would advise you, before we create additional businesses, we need to lobby our elected officials at City Hall, the current ones, and impress upon them that they need to do more to help and to assist the current African American business population, because it makes no sense. I'm a lawyer, so everything that I say has to be rational. And my rational and my premise is that we should not establish new African American businesses, or for that matter, any businesses, until the current businesses that are certified on the city's MBE list get work. And it's sad. It is totally sad and unacceptable, personally, that the black businesses that are on the city's MBE, WBE certification list get no businesses from the city. Give me an example. We have 1,500 African-American businesses that are certified with the city of Baltimore. We have another 200 businesses that are Hispanic. We have another 200 that are Asian-American. And we have 100 that are basically of American Indian status. Now, 1,500 African-American certified businesses get less contract dollars than 100 white Indians. And that, to me, is just unacceptable. And this is a city that is African-American managed, that has an African-American mayor and an African-American president of the city council, so we can truly say this is an African-American-controlled city. But yet, when you draw the analogy that 100 businesses that are white-skinned but are presenting themselves as American Indians, can you imagine they get more dollars than 1,500 African-Americans?
You know, Rev, and I'm going to call you Rev, doctor, and lawyer. You touched a sore point in this city in terms of who are the folk that have been elected to serve the interests of the people and the majority of people in this town. You know, it's a misnomer when you talk about minority businesses, because we're the majority of this town.
Well, wait a minute. Hope, I put in a bill 2 years ago to define minority as only black or African American. The current definition of minority doesn't always include black. In fact, it never includes black.
Wow.
Are you hearing me?
We got you. We hear you.
And are we surprised?
We shouldn't be surprised, because these are people that live with us and we elected. We elected these people.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, because I know you guys got other people that you want to hear today. My point is, and I think it's a fairly simple point, but nevertheless very, very true, that we in the black community are not getting our fair share. We're not getting our fair share solely because the mayor, the city solicitor, the president of the city council, the director of public works are not supporting us. They're supporting the white-skinned Portuguese, the white-skinned people from Spain, The white people, the white-skinned people from China,
yes.
The white-skinned people from Japan, the white-skinned people from Burma, the white-skinned people from Mexico, the white-skinned people from the Pacific Islands, all of these people get more money from the minority program than blacks. I did a study 2 months ago, and it showed that black people, black businesses, are going out of business in the city because they can't get any work, any contracts at all. And let me give you an example. In 2013, there was an African-American business by the name of R.E. Harrington and Associates. R.E. Harrington is one of the most excellent African-American construction company, actually the most it is one of the most excellent construction company without regard to being black, because we all know that our fathers and mothers taught us that you have to be good even though you're black.
You have to be better.
You have to be better even though you're black.
Yes.
And we've done that. The businesses in Baltimore City, R.E. Harrington and P&J Contractors, are excellent business. They are African-American owned, but nonetheless, they come to the table and they are better than some of the white firms.
Yes.
But do you know, let me get this and I'm going to let you go. Two things I want to point out. R.E. Harrington bid a three large construction jobs, and on each one of those construction jobs, R.E. Harrington was the lowest responsive dollar bidder.
Mm-hmm.
And the other largest excellent minority firm, African American, was P&J Contractors. Mm-hmm. P&J Contractors was R.E. Harrington's subcontractor.
Mm-hmm.
And R.E. Harrington was going to get $13 million, and P&J was going to get $7 million. But here's the irony. Here's the tragedy of that whole situation. The mayor, Mayor Rawlins Blake, the city solicitor, Nielsen, and the president of the city council, and the director of public works voted to take those contracts away from Harrington and P&J and award it to white firms.
Wow.
To me, that's unacceptable.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Sir, I just wanted to ask you one thing. There is certainly power in numbers, and I personally had never heard of the Maryland Minority Contractors. So I think any listeners out there can you give a phone number? And there's a caller there are a couple of callers that we're going to go to in just a moment. But what is your number, please?
Let me explain why you haven't heard of Maryland Minority Contractors.
Okay.
Maryland Minority Contractors was founded in 1974.
Okay.
By Robert Clay.
Oh.
Robert Clay is deceased now.
Yes.
With Douglas Sands and the Honorable Robert DeShields.
Mm-hmm.
Robert DeShields is a very prominent African-American attorney in Baltimore, and his practice is very profound. He's even argued cases before the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But when he goes down to the Board of Estimates, he can't win a case because the mayor and the city solicitor and the director of public works don't like him. He is a lawyer who founded the first African-American minority contract, and he does not get any respect when he goes to the city hall.
Wow.
Now, let me finish, though. The reason you haven't heard, because it was founded in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
However, in 1984, what happened is, actually in 1978, when the state first passed its first MBE law, WBE law in 1978,
mm-hmm.
then in 1982, 84, when they hired me to be the president of the Maryland Minority Contractors Association, I was right out of law school, and I didn't have a job, so they liked my fight,
mm-hmm.
and they liked the fact that I didn't take any prisoners,
mm-hmm.
so they hired me, and they paid me more money than I was getting as a lawyer. Private.
Wow.
I was working for the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Yes.
And the U.S. Attorney didn't pay a lot of money. So they paid me way more money. I can't tell you what exactly amount,
mm-hmm.
but they paid me more than the U.S. Attorney.
Okay, so sir, can you give the phone number? Because we have a couple of other callers. Just give the phone number for anyone who would like to know. We're going to go to our callers.
443-413-3011. That's the number.
443-413-3011. Thank you, sir.
All right. We appreciate that and appreciate everything that you do. Absolutely.
Yes.
So
yes.
We're gonna come back. I'd like to actually right now go out and pick up one of our callers we have on line two.
And ask the other caller that hung up to come back, please.
Absolutely. Come back and join us. Is this AO? Are you on the air?
Yes. I'm on the line. I had the pleasure of attending a meeting Bethel Church last night, and the mayor and the police chief were both there. Questions were asked, why weren't local entrepreneurs being used to teach our youth entrepreneurial skills and provide jobs for summer for our young people? And they said that the budget had been cut, so they don't have money. Someone else asked a question about, what about a police academy? How are you preparing young men for these positions? Because as I look at the highways, I see all these cars coming in from Pennsylvania, Delaware, everywhere else to take local jobs. And then they go back in the evening, go back to where they are. And I think we need to really have the churches and those people in step up to the plate so that we are really providing jobs for our young people, because this will stop some of the violence. If people know they are making money. I'd like to know that Reverend Dakina Potter was at that meeting last night, mm-hmm. and he brought up the issue of the homicide, the deaths of young people. And they somewhat resisted him speaking, but he did speak up. And as well as others who said that there's a dire need to focus on the youth and to focus on eliminating this gun policy, where guns are just too much.
Yes,
and
rampant.
Deal with the police officers who don't have the proper cultural training to deal with the issues of our young people. So we also want to. I also want to think about the terms of term limits for some of these city representatives and those people, those folks who protect. Who's supposed to suppress, protect all citizens, but who tend to just protect those in leadership positions.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Sister Ayo. Excuse me for cutting in. We have another caller.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank everyone. I'm going to have to leave early. We still have a few minutes for the program, but I just wanted to duck out here. Yes.
Yeah. Jai.
Yes. I'm thank you for having me, Reverend Napata. I'm going to have to go. But I just wanted to leave my number one more time for anyone who's interested in building a business, 410-908-0786. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and we appreciate you and all that you do in the community, Sister Jahari. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Jahari, for coming, and you will come back again.
Absolutely.
Hey, Arnold, if I could say this, not only are we going to have women, and you know more professional young people than I do, even though my daughter and son and all of them are that, we want to encourage them people to understand this is multi-generational. When I was in elementary school, we had a savings book account for the bank, and that was back in the 50s, right? And so all I'm saying is we want to create the type of models for savings, for investment, for creativity. I don't care if a person is braiding their daughter's hair. I mean, that's a potential business. The thing I would say also is I want to thank Dr. Arnold Jolivet for being on the line He is almost like a volcano. He has so much information that's packed down inside of him, the history, the culture, the church, I mean, the faith, the family. He believes in family, as you know. And he, in partnership with your mother, I mean, y'all could be in the White House. Let me just make it real simple. And so all I'm saying is that as he confronts the type of challenges all of us have as we work so hard and it has an impact on our health, we want to make sure that we not only pray for him and pray for his strength in the Lord, but for your family, and also let him know that he can call in on his show anytime, take as much time as he wants, even as we attempt to coordinate that within the context of radio, you know, other folks want to jump in and should, and we invite them to do so. The last thing I would say is this, that at that meeting last night at Bethel, we were doing a memorial, an uplifting service for the great Maya Angelou and other poets at Lafayette and Jewel Avenue, where Reverend Dr. Vernon Dobson has a memorial at Henry Holland Garnett Park. And so after an hour of that type of celebration, then I went over to Bethel. I spoke to the police commissioner very forthright on the outside. And then when the mayor came in short, I went inside. And they were having that type of discussion, a panel discussion. I affirmed and spoke to the great Dr. Frank Madison Reed, who was the angel of that house, as well as the house out in the county. And we talked about the selling. I talked with him about the selling of city property on the 6th. And we're going to have further discussions. He can choose to follow the path of his focus. But what we're going to do is to make sure that these historical sites that are being sold in the public venue, that they be secured, you know, by African-American hands so that historical resources can come. And so people that are doing private enterprises can have the type of buildings and properties. And you'd be surprised at how many buildings and properties are in this program that are being up for sale. And so I just say that as we encourage our persons to call in, we want them to be part of the marching plan, putting their resources where their mouths are, as they, I'm sure they will, so that we can secure the type of cooperative economic banking that can secure the type of resources in the way of the real estate and land that the city seems to say it can't pay for. So also at Bethel, and I'm through, when I attempted to speak, because they had a forum, and when I attempted to speak after listening, they didn't acknowledge me several occasions, so I stood up to speak anyhow. And the mayor's little aide that was coordinating the program said, "Doc, you know," and I said, "Yes, I'm going to speak. Because we're going to talk about violence in this community. As your father said, there has to be talk about jobs and economics and the like." And they attempted to set me up, but I would not. And I said, "I've done 3 funerals in the last week and a half. You know, one of the brother Najee, right, the son of the Stop the Snitching person, and we, our hearts go out to his family. A 14-year-old who went to Coppin Heights High School, and those youngsters turned out in droves down in Cherry Hill near my mother. And then less than a week later, on Mother's Day, the brother Tajay, you know, a young man who was ready to graduate from high school, is down there, and he was doing some gaming, and then somebody came to rob the game and shot in the air, and he didn't move because he said, "I want to get my mother's money to buy my mother a Mother's Day gift," and unfortunately, he was shot 2 times in the head. And his funeral was at the great Joseph Brown funeral home. And you couldn't get in the place. And that was very heartbreaking, but his family stood strong in faith. And young people came from every place. And there was not one person, not gang leader or anybody else, that had their pants down. They honored that family. They stood in a row coming down there in that funeral home. And I honored them because, and I said that last night. And after having said that, the security guard from Bethel, you know, came over and put his hands on me. And Brother Harold, you know, it took me a lot of restraint as a martial artist not to flip him. And I said, "Please take your hands off me." He did not and attempted to usher me out. And I know under the terms of law, that is assault, and I intend to look and talk to my lawyer, Eddie Smith, and your father about what must I do to make sure that happen doesn't happen to anybody else, a minister or anybody else that attempts to express themselves in the Church of God about the type of damaging thing that's happening in this community. Because downtown, what I saw around Memorial Day is people going downtown, young people, And then all of a sudden, young people get together, and there's the incident. And what happened was police came out of the woodwork because they were over at the ball game. And I know it's so at least 75, if not more, policemen and cars is Bin Laden had come to town. And that is unacceptable. The young people are not welcome downtown. Some shouldn't be because of their behavior. But many of them don't have recreation centers in other places uptown, even as they discuss curfew. So I know I said a lot. But all I'm saying, more than anything, this show is the Freedom Justice Report, the Faith, Freedom, and Justice Report. We are freedom fighters, and we're asking folks to come to join the cause, including the young people, as we're going to have a major rally for young people around violence and jobs. So thanks so much for listening to it.
All right. We appreciate you, Reverend Doc Key, and all the words that you said and the way that you continue to fight for the city. So we have another caller that we're going to bring on now, and I believe that is Bubby. Bubby, are you on the line? Bubby, are you on the line? All right, we may have lost Bubby.
Well, you know, Brother Arnold, one of the things that both your father and Doc Key have pointed out is the disconnect between the political and the economic here in the city. And it's something that we need to address. I mean, there cannot be economic justice if there's no political justice in the city, and folk have to understand that their votes are precious, and if they're still in the system and voting, and they need to not just carelessly throw their votes at politicians who do not in turn represent them. In order for us to sit here and have to lament in the 21st century that we have unresponsive black politicians or politicians whose skins are black, because obviously they're not operating from a black point of view, is a sad commentary on the state of where we are in the city. What we have to do is organize, and we have to organize. There's not going to be any kind of, I understand totally where your father's coming from. We can have all the black businesses in the world. If we're not throwing money through them, if money's not passing through them so they're employing black employees and black employees are supporting black stores, and in other words, there's an economic acceleration of money through the black community, which we'll be able to raise the black community on our own based on that, turning money around in the black community.
Absolutely.
But if it's nothing coming into the black community, right, and everything is being sucked out of the black community, then that's a prescription for economic depression.
Right.
And that in terms of the five things, the five healths that Sister Jahari was talking about in terms of that socioeconomic health that we're not discussing. And if we don't discuss it, then we'll be in a terrible situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we have to be able to pour into our own community in order for us to get something out of it. You know, so you're absolutely right about that. And it's really up to us. You know, we can't look to we see right now if we rely on those in political power or those the powers that we say to be that are making decisions on our behalf, then we're going to be in trouble. We're absolutely going to be in trouble. So it's really up to us to empower ourselves, to come together, to unify and to be able to make a difference. You know, one person, you know, and that's the great thing about having advocates in the business community, advocates that are willing to take a stand, is you may not have a voice, but if you link yourself up with someone who's not afraid to speak out on your behalf as a business owner or a community member, then you do have a voice. You will be heard, and you will be able to, you know, strengthen yourself by linking up with other people who are like-minded. So we're excited about the change that is due to take place. And again, the change, Reverend Dobson, begins in the mind. That's where everything is created, in the mind. And I heard Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. say that a man can only ride your back unless it is bent. So we have to make the decision not to just go along with the way things are just because that's how it's always been, and put the pressure on, you know, it's the same way that we have these political leaders that are in office, whether it be in a local, the state, or the federal level. We also have the power to be able to put them out of office as well. So that's why it's so exciting when you see people who are disenchanted with the way things are going in the community, and they take a stand. Either they take a stand to support someone who is like-minded, or they take a stand to run themselves to be able to affect change. So the change begins with me. The change begins with you. The change begins with everyone who's listening on these airwaves to make a decision to stop having things continue to go the way they are. It could be in your own house. You know, everything rises and falls with leadership. Whether you're leading in your own home, whether you're leading in your community, whether you're leading at your business or your job, everything rises and falls with leadership. So if you look at the city, if the city is in a sad state of affairs, you can make a direct correlation to the leadership.
You have to look at the leadership. And if that leadership is not serving, and that's one thing that we don't seem to understand. And I mean, in the African community that I've grown up in, leadership is servantship. Folks serve people, and that's how they become leaders.
Right.
And folk have obviously disconnected from that. They've taken a new model of leadership, and that kind of model has no place in the black community, no place in the black community that I know about, historical black communities that are struggling for their freedom to gain it and to maintain it. And we need to address seriously those folks who don't understand. I mean, one thing we have to raise up and understand that the one position that your father talked about did not mention in terms of we were looking at the Board of Estimates. So we're talking about the president, city council, mayor, the solicitor, and Department of Public Works. But there was a fifth position, which is a minority position, which is the city controller. And we had to raise up the fact that that sister, Joan Pratt, seems to have an understanding of where she's come from.
Mm.
And so we're gonna use her as a model in terms of at least raising questions about where folk are being supported. And as a friend of mine talks about, a politician, their job is, who are they feeding? Mm. And if they're not feeding their own, then what's the point of their being there?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Reverend Dobson, I hear our music, so that is our cue. Absolutely enjoyed the time we've had to share together and with those who are out there listening and listening online. So tune in the next time. We will be on your airwaves. And again, I just want to leave you with this. As the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, if you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. For it isn't by size that you win or you fail, but be the best at whatever you are. Take care, take charge, and God bless.
OLB, where information is power.
I'm Elena. I have a master's degree in giving hope to children in Ethiopia.
I'm John. My farm experience helped villagers in the Philippines feed themselves.
I'm Nanaya. I have a degree in making an impact for generations to come.
If you have a degree in agriculture, the environment, or teaching English, you actually have a degree in doing more than you ever thought possible. Peace Corps volunteers can truly make a difference in the lives of people all over the world. With your skills and education, you could help create an irrigation system for a small village in Paraguay, or share new teaching methods to educators in Moldova. The experiences you'll gain in the Peace Corps will stay with you forever. This is your chance to make a real difference, a difference only you can make. Explore how the Peace Corps can fit into your future. Visit peacecorps.gov.
My resume
My resume
now includes changing lives.